Welcome to Ruby Lola Keeping Current, the space where we talk about everything early childhood education for anyone who has the passion for quality ECE. Join our Facebook community at Ruby Lola AU and follow our Keeping Current blog at rubylola.net. And now, here's your host, Angela Bush.
Today it's my great pleasure to be introducing to you Catherine Bussey, who is an infant and toddler specialist and also a PICLA pedagogue. Catherine is originally from Auckland, Aotearoa, New Zealand, but she moved to Melbourne in February 2013 to undertake a PhD, and she completed that in 2017. Catherine has investigated the work of infant and toddler specialists in early childhood teacher education in universities in Australia and New Zealand. She's also the chairperson for the Infant and Toddler Advocacy Network in Australia. She's a research fellow, senior research assistant, project manager, and she has lectured at Deakin University and also ACU in Melbourne. She's worked on a range of projects across Australia as a senior research assistant, professional development facilitator, and project manager. She is also a PICLA pedagogue candidate, and she consults with professional learning and development educators and teachers who work with infants, toddlers and young children. She also does guest lecturing for various tertiary institutions, works for infant and toddler networks and workshops for teachers in individual early childhood centres in Australia and also in New Zealand. So without further ado, it is my pleasure today to welcome Catherine Bussey. Welcome, Catherine.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Thanks for giving your time today. Let's just start with one of my favourite ways to start a podcast is just to help us get to know a little bit about you. Give us one of your favourite quotes and tell us why it's a favourite.
Yeah, so I had to think this morning about that because I kept thinking, I'm actually not a big quote person. I know Penny Brownlee is always such a person that can sort of reel off all these amazing quotes. I always really appreciated this. But I think that there were a couple that came to mind. I couldn't remember whether this was either from, I think it's Amy Pickler said this, the mother cares for the child because she loves them. And the caregiver loves the child because she, sorry, no, I'll start again with that because I wrote the wrong thing down actually, which is not helpful. Anyway, the mother cares for the child because she loves them and the caregiver loves the child because she cares for them.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really big difference there. Because I think that, often we sort of think about, that idea of care and how it's important. But actually, for me, you show so much love in the care that you give to children, and that's incredibly important. And the other quote that I always loved, and it's such a vivid memory for me, in 2004, one of my teachers at the PICLA House, Uta Strub, who then came out to New Zealand in, I think it was 2006, and she said, peacemaking starts on the, I think she said diapering table, so on the nappy change table. And so I often think about that actually, if we did have children experiencing this is the way you are touched, this is the way that you are cared for, this is the way you're spoken to, then actually this is what they begin to expect. And that's the thing that I really appreciate about this work, is that you can really change children's lives. And I think that I was so inspired hearing at a conference in 2018 at the PICLA International Symposium, Bernard Gaulch, who's a very he's a French psychotherapist, so not so well known in the English-speaking world, but at the conference he said you cannot change the world with the PICLA approach, but you can change the children and they will change the world.
Right.
Which is such an inspiring thing for me. I just keep on thinking, wow, that's exactly what it's about. So really thinking about, that effort that you can make through care to really connect to a child and to really help them to feel like this is the way the world works, and this is the way you touch someone, this is the way that you connect with someone. And then that ripple keeps on going out into the world beyond, if that is something that they experience consistently.
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. how I care for you today is how you will care for others in the world.
Absolutely.
And possibly me in my old age.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that there are some lovely videos that really illustrate that. And maybe I'll post that onto the Facebook group. There's this, you know, lovely video of this, I think it's probably around maybe in his late 50s, early 60s. And he's been caring for his dad through his old age. And he shaves his face. And it's, you know, it is an advertisement for Gillette. But it's such a powerful video. It really shows that importance of that, you know, that care and connection, and how we can actually show that to the end of someone's life as well. So it's amazing.
The importance of love and respectful care.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Thank you for that, Catherine. That's really great. I'm sure a lot of early childhood teachers will identify that for sure. So you've got a really long history in early childhood education.
Yes.
Tell me about how you came to be an infant and toddler pedagogue today. Am I saying the word right there?
Yeah, I would say, well, I'm an infant and toddler specialist, and I'm working on becoming a Picklin pedagogue. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm focusing on, as well as my other paid work. So yeah, my, you know, career did start a while ago. I have been working on this work for around 20 years now, very solidly. But I was first inspired to go into early childhood at the age of 14, and then went straight from school into my degree at what was then Auckland College of Education. And I was very fortunate to have Jean Rockle as one of my lecturers. In my second year, I was about to go on my first infant and toddler practicum or placement, depending on where you live. You use different terms. And she said, "Oh, you should come along to the infant and toddler network meeting that we're having, tonight or the next night, so you can learn all about this." And the person speaking there that night was Maureen Perry, and I remember writing 9 pages of notes and being so inspired by that. It really shifted and changed my life. And from then I, you know, ordered all of the books, from Rye, Your Self-Confident Baby was the first book that I read. And then, of course, Dear Parent after that. There were very few books that you could obtain at that time. And I remember I worked in a bookstore and then would keep on looking for, you know, these search terms. And then probably about 6 months to a year before it was released, the Authentic Relationships and Group Care book, the green one, came out and was coming out in the UK. And I knew about it in advance because I had seen it in the computer system and was so excited. But I became a major nerd about infants and toddlers, was very engaged for the rest of my degree. And then in the next year, Maureen came to speak to my infant and toddler class. And she said, "Oh, I recognise you." I came along to Jean's office to, you know, to say that I'd found this amazing quote and wanted to share it with her. And Maureen said, "Oh, I recognise you." And I said, "I come along to everything that I can," and was so eager. And I think I was maybe 21 at that point, or maybe 20. And then she said, I said that I was planning to go to do my study in LA at Rye. And she said, "Oh, I'm the first course is going to be offered in Hungary at the Packler Institute. You should come along." And I said, "Oh, no, I can't do that." And if I, you know, I will admit freely that at that time geography was, and still is, not a major strong point of mine. I had no idea. My father would probably, you know, be very upset to hear that I did not know where it was. He's very into maps. But I came back to class and remember saying to one of my friends, "Oh, you know," she said, "I should come along to Hungary, but I don't even know where that is, and I don't know what I can do about, you know, I don't think I can do that." And I think maybe a couple of weeks later, I was starting to look for a job because I was, you know, going to finish off my qualification, and went to go and observe at a centre, and was sitting there on the ground on the floor in one centre, and just it hit me, I had to go. And so I worked 60 hours a week, I saved all this money, I borrowed money from my parents, and I got a couple of scholarships, which was wonderful, and went to Hungary for the first time in 2004. And so that was amazing because, the things that I learnt there, I felt like it really know, it supported some of the work that I had learned to my degree, but it really helped me to understand this is how I want to work with children, really connecting and really engaging in deep respect. And I was able to engage in 5 days of observation as well, which was wonderful. And there were a group of, I think, 5 of us that first time who went to Hungary in 2004 out of 14 in the world. That's a pretty great, number of Kiwis, which was nice. And then I came back and started working as a teacher, and I worked with 2 to 3 year olds. And so I did that for, I think, 3.5, nearly 4 years. And in that time, I also went back again for the second part of the training. So at that time, the course was run for, you did 2 weeks. You did an intensive first part, the summer course, and then you did an intensive second part. And so we went back with a group of people in 2006 to do the second part of the Pickler work then. And then I kept on working and changed jobs to be, I think I was initially employed as the supervisor at the Learning Centre, and was able to make heaps of changes there, which was wonderful. And Pickler weren't coming out with any new trainings. It just kept on looping back the first and the second parts. And so then I went to the States to do my RAI foundations. And so that, I think, really helped me to understand how to work more with colleagues and work with adults, because that hadn't been such a huge focus of the Pickler training initially in 2004 and 2006. It was more like the science of it, I guess, if that's an easier way to explain it. So that's how I sort of focused there. And then I also went back to the States in 2010 to do training with the California Department of Education, PITC, which is Program for Infant Toddler Care. So I did some intensive training to learn how to teach infant and toddler teachers. So that was really good. With Ron Lilly, sadly he passed away early this year, and Peter Mangione. So I've continued on my relationship with him through the work with Pickler. And then throughout this time as well, I did a postgraduate diploma in child advocacy at University of Otago, and then did my Masters of Education at University of Auckland in 2011-2012. Focused that work around, I interviewed 4 teachers about the notion of care as curriculum. So that was, the first research that had been done about that. I know that Janet Gonzalez-Mina, I really feel, had coined that phrase in discussions with Magda Gerber, really advocating that care is an active part of the curriculum, or it can be, depending on what the experience that people have. And so I completed that study. And then I really got the research bug. And I thought, I'd always intended, with my sort of midway through my first degree, I thought, I'm going to end up doing a master's. I knew that was going to happen. But I never intended to do my PhD. I wasn't a major brainiac, but I was very passionate about the work that I wanted to do, and I wanted to help support people. And also, I look quite young, and I felt that maybe becoming a doctor will help me to be taken more seriously. I'm not sure about that. I think people are still, think that I'm much younger than I am, but So I got a scholarship and I came out to Melbourne in 2013, and I specifically chose a particular supervisor to work with. I focus my work around the work of infant and toddler specialists who work in universities. So I looked at people who work in teacher education and what their work was about. That was very interesting. But I still felt like my heart was with, and it was my one major regret was to not actually do my PhD about the work of teachers. I'm not so interested about researching about children, but I'm very interested in supporting teachers and educators. And so I think that I do regret that I didn't do my PhD looking at the work of respectful care and the work of and the influence of Dr. Emmy Pickler and Magda Gerber's work on teachers and educators. I think that would have been great. but you know, you can't do everything. And then in 2017, I handed in my PhD, and then they had offered a new course in Hungary. So I had a deadline that I needed to finish off my PhD in order to be able to go out to Hungary. So that was amazing. So that was my gift to myself after that slog of my PhD. It was the hardest thing I've ever done. And then I've continued on my training. So I've been in 2017, 2018, 2019, or three times actually in 2018. So a lot of flying there within 6 months. And then this year we had to do the training online. So I'm now at the point where I don't actually need to be doing any more of the modules, the topics. However, I want to learn everything that I can. And so I've gone through the work case discussion where you, two of those weeks where you bring your work and you discuss it together with a group of people. And now I'm in the process of working on my thesis. So that's the final sort of stage of the process. And then I need to defend that thesis. Yeah, so that's sort of a bit of my history. And I think it's really important to actually illustrate this is how I got to where I am today, because I think that sometimes people sort of think, oh, she just arrived like that, and that's not the case, and that actually I had some opportunities but a lot of hard work in order to be able to, you know, and I don't have a mortgage, I don't have, I have my education. You know, I think that's important to sort of know, clarify as well, as that a lot of my money, a lot of my time has been focused around my education, for sure.
Yeah, that's a pretty impressive history that you've just described there. That's an awful lot of, I can just appreciate the amount of work and time and effort that you've put into that. And the contribution that you're able to make now to the early childhood field, to teachers.
Yeah. Thank you. I think also important to keep in mind is that it wasn't just that I was going to training, but I was I worked full time the entire time. So I was continually putting this into practice. Pretty much most times that I went away on a holiday, it was actually, I was going to a conference, I was going to training, and then I tacked on a week or two. And then I would integrate that back into my practice and really deliberate and engage in critical reflection together with colleagues. And so that was something that's really key to think about. It's not just going along to training, it's actually really not just marinating in it, but it's actually really cogitating. It's really like working through problems, constantly thinking about it, constantly reflecting on things. And I think that's really crucial to think about as well. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And I'd love to hear a bit more about that perhaps later in our conversation. But first of all, let's hear about your PhD research. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I mentioned a little bit before, I worked, I looked at the work of six women, so three people in Australia and three people in New Zealand who specialise in infants and toddlers and their work in universities. I think one of the most interesting parts for me was that actually, you know, unsurprising to me, it was a hard slog. And so quite a few of them, you know, had a situation, or actually every single one of them actually had a situation where they had colleagues attempting to take infant and toddler content out of the programs. And so one of the instances, actually in the interview with one of the people, she said, oh, no, I actually have a pretty good time. My colleagues are pretty supportive. And then maybe, I think it was about 5 months, 6 months later, we had a focus group back together, maybe 5 months later, and she said she was absolutely ropeable because she'd experienced it. And she had arranged annual leave for the first time outside of, you know, the sort of shutdown period, and her colleagues had specifically organised a meeting while she was away in order to try and get rid of infant and toddler content. And quite rightly, she was ropeable.
Wow.
And I just, you know, that was the most interesting thing, because it actually really showed that infants and toddlers are not valued, you know, particularly within the university system. And that's something that I constantly struggle with, is, you know, I've worked in units here and supported and advocated for teachers, and also, you know, would go and guest lecture, you know, primarily for Jean's classes at University of Auckland, talking about, you know, infants and toddlers. But there's very little focus on it within the program. It's primarily 3 to 5 year olds. Absolutely.
So what would be the key findings that you had in your research?
I think that advocacy was a meta strategy. So in order to then you know, support and focus on infants and toddlers, and they really had to continually advocate. And actually one of my research participants said, I'm like a squeaky wheel, and that, you know, she would say, I would feel sometimes that they would, you know, they'd see me coming and think, oh, here she goes again, you know, sort of rolling their eyes at her, hounding. And that's my experience as well, is that you do keep on feeling like you need to keep on challenging and questioning and advocating, but always advocating, always on it, never feeling like you could fully relax because the work is never done.
Yeah. So I think you've just reinforced there for many people who are probably listening to this podcast who are infant and toddler teachers, that just how undervalued the role is. And we all know how important it is.
And I think that also there's a very different, you know, it's a very different system between, you know, Australia and New Zealand. Here you typically do not have qualified teachers working with birth to three-year-olds, more so in New South Wales. And so most of my consulting work has been undertaken there. But I know quite a few colleagues who've moved over from New Zealand and wanted to work with children under the age of three, and they've just not been able to obtain a job. So typically you'll have a diploma room leader, and then many of the other educators will have a certificate three. So it's a much lower qualification than we would have in New Zealand. So maybe for people in New Zealand who are listening, it's not the same as the diploma that we used to have, because often for many people that diploma was then, you know, sort of grandfathered into the degree, which it's not the same situation here at all. So it's a very different situation. It's far less valued compared to in New Zealand.
That's really interesting. So tell me about your experiences in Budapest, and what were the main things that you learned there?
I think hard to summarize the main things, but I think that you know, that I really learned how to observe. And I think that that's the thing that I remember when I encouraged Jean to go, and I think it would have been, did she go to Hungary? Probably was 2011. And she said, actually, I never knew how to observe before I went to the Pickley House. And so I think that I really learned to observe in a very scientific way. And so to be very focused in my observations and very committed to really trying to understand what was going on. And I often would think about myself putting on a scientist coat and observing scientists at work. So that was a really key thing that I very vividly remember, was thinking about even which parts of the foot and the, you know, the bones and the muscles moving. As a child was climbing down these, you know, we looked at these images of this child going down these concrete steps at the Pickley House, and it was, really amazing. I think the care that I've continually observed there is the best that I've ever seen. You know, and now, you know, they've had the child care centre since 2006, you know, they have, I think the infant home shut down completely in 2011, and so it's been solely been a childcare centre since then, and now there's three rooms they have operating full time, and I think that the care there that I see, and I think that sometimes people would say, oh well, yes, the children were there 24/7, you know, 365 days a year for the first 3 years of their life, so of course you can, you know, do these amazing things with these children. But now they've got children who are from, you know, homes, they're not from traumatic backgrounds most of the time, who are, you know, coming along to the centre. They're actually more like a workplace centre, so they're actually attached to a, I think it's the Department of Statistics. So they're actually mostly a workplace centre, and I think they've got some community spaces, but that's an interesting thing to know, because also parents aren't necessarily seeking them out specifically because of the type of care that they give there. But the care that they give is still amazing. and they do have some of the challenges that we had. So one of the things that we talked a lot about this year in the course that I did on Dialogue Online was around how they were struggling with children attempting, not wanting to engage so much in care moments and wanting wanting to try and sort of distract the educator at times with other things, with conversation, rather than actually talking about what was happening with their body. So there are things that they're struggling with and that they're working through. And I think that's something that I really appreciate about them is that, you know, I did a course on socialization in 2006, but I needed to repeat that, I think it was in 2018 or 2018, because the content had actually changed, because their perceptions had changed. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a really important thing to think about, is that their work is continually, you know, shifting and changing. You know, they've been involved in this one really interesting research project that I keep on waiting for it to be published about the way or the language structure of how caregivers interact and play with the children. So they call their educators caregivers, gondozono. How they interact with the children during play, because they do interact with the children during play. It's not just observation, so they do assist the children, but it's not so much playing with them, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I'm very interested in that research coming out, but they're constantly debating and working out different things. You know, they have been, other than this year, of course, travelling to other countries in the world and supporting and going through trainings. And, I think they have been shifting quite a bit in their work as well. So,
right.
I think those are sort of the main things that I've been thinking about, there's so many things that, you know, I could speak about it all day, the things that I learned there, but the observations that, you know, myself and the other people who have engaged in observations there talk about it, they're just life-changing.
Sounds intriguing. Well, maybe let's talk about the PICFOR approach then. So for some people who might be listening, they may be new to understanding what this is about. So can you help us explain what is the PICFOR approach about in a nutshell? That's also could be hours of talking about.
Nutshell, I think the most important thing is that you work in partnership with the child so they can be an authentic, active partner in everything that you're doing. So every time you touch a child, every time you speak to a child, you're really thinking about what that could feel like yourself. So I think the most important thing is not just about, well, this is the PICFOR way of doing it. The most important thing is actually to think about what is the child's experience. Because I think even if you had learned, well, this is the way that they feed children at the PICFOR house, this is the way that they do things, this is the way movement should be, or this is, you know, people can get into sort of dogmatic rules sometimes. The most important thing that you keep on coming back to for me, and the thing that keeps me engaged, is to really think about what is this child's experience like. And then it helps you to pay attention. It's kind of like a mindfulness practice, rather than sort of going through the motions and now I'm going to wipe your bottom, now I'm going to do this, now I'm going to do that, blah, 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 which can happen, if particularly if you've got other things on your mind. You actually then really think about, what is the child's face showing me right now? What are they, what are you showing them with the expression? Or what are you showing me with the way that you're holding your body? And how can I connect with you in order to be able to support you to fully develop, to be a wonderful, the wonderful human being that you can be. So I think those are the key, some of the key things that I'd say. Also, of course, free movement, so that, we support the child to develop in the, in the way that they need to in terms of free movement. Not putting the child into a position they haven't yet found themselves. And care is an absolute, key integral part of this. So then in order for children to play well, to feel connected, to feel relaxed, to explore, they need to be engaged in a caring relationship with someone who touches them gently and asks them to be actively involved.
Yeah, okay, great. That's That sounds amazing. And, you know, you can really identify with what you're saying there about asking yourself the question, what is the child's experience?
Yes.
Because if that's what you focus on as a teacher in the moment and care moments with children, that really reframes the way that you approach it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't then become a, this is a task, this is something I have to get through. And even sometimes I think, you know, quite a few teachers that I've worked with in the past, you know, a great example of this is I'd worked with one centre in a regional area. They had been working with primary caregiving relationships for, a couple of years that they'd been thinking about it. But when I first observed there, they would then change 10 children at 10 o'clock because they thought that was what the policy was, which is not the case at all. And so I suggest people look at their policies carefully. But then after a period of time, we worked together. And what I found was that then they separated the groups up. And so they had one group being changed of five children being changed at 9:30 and one group of children being changed at 10 o'clock. And I said, well, in the first part, we talked about, you know, shifting away from being a factory mentality. And I said, well, you've moved from a factory to a nice factory now. And so, you know, best intentions. And we're able to laugh about that together. But I said, you know, I think that we need to move beyond that to really actually thinking about, well, what that would that experience feel like? Because, you know, even thinking about that, you know, in my old age, and here's hoping I don't have to end up in a home, or touch wood. But, you know, if I was someone that was then lined up to be showered and it was just next person after the next person after the next person, rather than actually, hi, really nice to see you and let's do this together type of mentality. And also with toileting, it's not here, it's 10 o'clock, now it's the time for you to go to the toilet. We actually need for ourselves as adults to be, whether you're an educator, a teacher or a parent, to actually then be flexible and actually really respond to that child's rhythm and routine in terms of toileting, rather than saying it's convenient for me now for all four of you to go to the bathroom.
So
that was a great shift that they were able to then make, and then they were actually able to ask questions at the beginning of the day, like, when was the last time they went to the bathroom? And then they had that knowledge already from having a great relationship with the family when they first started, to know actually they live 5 minutes drive away. They had their nappy changed 10 minutes ago, so they're likely not going to need to have their nappy changed within the next 3 to 4 hours. But I always know it's 8 o'clock, and I always know that she has a bowel motion at 11:30. So I'm going to change her at around 11:30 as soon as that happens. You know, so taking that knowledge and actually,
it's individual care.
Yeah, really thinking about that individual and how you can support them. And then, of course, you need to support the group. So, you know, you work in partnership with your colleagues that you're working with to then say, I'm going to, you know, need to change this person. And sometimes you might have to wait for 5 minutes while someone else is being changed. But, you know, that's part of, you know, part of group care as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You've kind of alluded there, Catherine, to some of the your role where you're a leader in the national project in Australia. Could you tell us about that?
Yeah, so I worked in Australia. So I moved here in 2013 I worked as a consultant with a range of different organisations. And one of the organisations I started to work with in, I think it was 2015, I was brought in to work with the New South Wales and ACT team. So I went around all of the 14 regions that they have. It's a pretty big state and territory region, and did some workshops with them. And from that work, I was able to help support that particular centre. And so that was with Good Start. And then the chief operating officer, Warren, who now is the CEO of Guardian, so he could see the huge benefits for the project that they had started within New South Wales. So Michelle Richardson was an operations manager at that time. So you've got the state manager and you've got a couple of operations managers and then a whole bunch of area managers to support centres underneath that. So I was working with Michelle and the team there to help support them, and they had a huge focus around what we then decided to use the term of key educator relationships. So we did initially call it the key educator approach, but then we realised that some people were then becoming a bit sort of rulesy and this is how things should be done and not focusing on the relationship aspect. So it wasn't just a task to be completed, it was actually this is about a relationship. So in 2018, early 2018, I was brought onto the national team. So there was just Michelle and I for a number of months working together on this project. And so the intention was that for all children, so not just birth to three, but all children across all of their centres. And at the time they had 650 centres across Australia. So that's a big ask. It's across every state and territory. So that's a lot of places to go. We then needed to work with them to help support key educator relationships to develop. So that was fantastic, because then, you know, we'd had such amazing traction. You know, the things that had happened in New South Wales were able to record practice, because the practice that we were seeing was really great. Interview educators and teachers. I think one of the most touching stories was one of the educators was talking about, you know, that she had been working in early childhood for 30 years, and for the last 3 years that she'd been working at the centre, because of the changes made due to key educator relationships, that she'd actually put off retiring twice. Her husband wasn't very happy with her because they'd agreed to retire together, but she didn't want to leave her job because she loved it so much, and she'd never felt like that before. And part of me felt really sorry for her for 27 years of not really enjoying her work. But then I felt so inspired by that story. It was, yeah, wonderful. It was really wonderful to hear that. And so that was really amazing. So we then worked together individually with each state and territory, because they're all very different. You know, geographically, you know, Queensland's huge. You know, there's so many different centres, so many different very remote areas as well. So we had to work in quite strategic ways. And so I worked on that team as a leader. So I was I worked sort of the second person together with Nicole to support them. So I focused more on the birth to three and Nicole on the 3 to 5 age group, which was great because all of my experience primarily has been with birth to three. And so that was really wonderful. We would give workshops, we ran conferences, we would do a range of workshops, we would create them so that then the early learning consultants that work within the organisation would run them. We also, the most empowering, amazing thing that we did was that we had, we created lighthouse centres, so centres that really showed an interest in this work. We then really focused on supporting them, so we would go out and do visits with them. So a lot of my work as a consultant is that I observe and support educators and teachers and in their work and help them to make changes. So we were able to do that with them. But also, and so I went to every state, I think, except for Northern Territory, to that territory to support them. So lots of travel. But the other thing that we did was that we had tours. So we would actually bring the lighthouse centres and in some cases some other people who needed some extra support would come and observe centres, primarily in New South Wales and also in ACT at times, to then see what really good key educator relationships look like. So that was fantastic because, you know, people were then saying, oh, I really get it now. Whereas before they struggled to get their head around it. But it's not, you can watch a video, but I think that sitting quietly in a room and observing relationships that are happening and hearing educators then later, because they would then come and do a panel to this group of people, and then, they, you know, people were able to, the educators and teachers and directors were able to ask questions. So it was wonderful. That work was really amazing. We also created lots of materials, online webinars, booklets, pamphlets, handouts, all sorts of different things as well, myth cards. I felt like, you know, hopefully you've seen that gif of the cat that's frantically typing on the keyboard. Yeah. Just, you know, that's what I felt like constantly in that role. So it was wonderful and we were able to make lots of changes. But unfortunately, there was a leadership change and key educator relationships at the national level. And so key educator relationships were not a focus for her. And at the very similar time, the chief operating officer left, and he was our prime advocate. So if we didn't have that support, then we weren't really able to continue on with the work. So luckily, Michelle was able to move into a great role in another another organisation in New South Wales where she's the Executive Director of Pedagogy, and we've been able to continue our work together since, and actually wrote a book together that came out just recently, which is wonderful. So,
what's the name of that book?
So it's called Attuned Routine Experiences. And in terms of the Australian context, this book is actually a really big deal. And the reason that I say that is because it's a very small book. So you can see, well, you know, people won't see this, but it's very small. But these books actually go out to a really wide group of people. So basically, this is a subscription series that you sign up to with Early Childhood Australia. Mm-hmm. And so this is one of four books that has come out this year from Early Childhood Australia. So it's really exciting because a whole bunch of people who would never have read my work will read this. And also it's really accessible. So each section is just a page or two, you know, 2 to 3 pages long maybe. You know, the section on nappy changes and toilet learning is just 2 pages. So we had to make it really succinct. It was only allowed to be, I think, 4,000 words in total. You know, so we worked hard for that to be a small book. But we wanted to have that out there because then it was able to reach lots of people as well.
Amazing. I'll get the details from you, Catherine, and put those in the notes, the podcast notes, so that people can find out how to access that book.
Yeah, so it is a little bit tricky at the moment for people in New Zealand. I am still actively working on trying to obtain copies, and I'm hoping to then have them sent out from New Zealand so that you can buy them from me directly rather than, or from someone else directly rather than. I looked at posting it to the States and I think it was going to be like $100.
It
was not good, so I decided that would not be an option there, so I'm working on that at the moment, but it's taking a bit longer than I had wanted. So Michelle and I have worked on
let me know when you're ready.
Yeah, absolutely. Michelle and I have worked together on a range of different projects and you know, have been really connected with the work that she has done. She was part of the group that initially set up the not-for-profit that I am the chairperson for and run. She since stepped down with, you know, she had too much work going on in her previous role. So, yeah, but it's been great to sort of work on those different things together because, you know, we were able to make some really huge change and people saying, you know, this has completely changed my life and the children are so settled, you know, the families are so happy, we're not losing families anymore, we're not having complaints, you know, all sorts of amazing things were happening. So it was a really great project to work on. I really, really enjoyed it so much. So. Yeah,
that sounds amazing, Catherine. So in all this time that you've been working in early childhood in New Zealand and Australia through that project, what, in your opinion, where do you think we were in our practice 15 years ago versus where we are now? What do you think of the main shifts that we've seen in our infant toddler practice?
I think I have to first say that I think politically New Zealand was really pushed backwards by the changes made by the national government. So I first want to say that because I think that politics are really integral to anything that happens. And I think that, you know, when the change was made to reduce the funding for teachers' registration, so that then took away a huge bunch of, you know, of professional development money that then was, you know, put into, you know, for centres to actually afford for teachers to go through professional learning. That was a huge blow. And also the, you know, the focus of that you only need to have 50% of qualified teachers working with children birth to two was a real slap in the face. So I want to first say that I think that politics have been really instrumental from, you know, 15 years ago, I was really feeling really excited about what was happening. You know, we'd come back in 2004, you know, from Budapest. And because, you know, Penny Brown was a very well-known person at that time for her Magic Places book. You know, people were then very interested in hearing about what she was doing now. And so, you know, we spoke to, I think, 180 people in August of 2004. So there was a lot of interest then from people and that started to keep on growing and building up. I noticed that there was I used to, you know, go and give workshops around the country. And I remember at one point, I think it was 2008 or 2009, being in Nelson and speaking to a group of 50 people and asking how many people, you know, here work with primary caregiving or key teacher relationships. And, you know, 4 people out of 50 did not put up their hands. And then a couple of months later, I was giving, you know, a similar workshop in Whangarei, and 3 people out of 60 said they did. You know, so that was a huge difference to actually look at, you know, and for me at the time, I realised actually, you know, you had Stuart Guyton working in Nelson at that time, really advocating really strongly for, you know, infants and toddlers. And so that, you know, a huge effort, you know, impact on those, you know, on teachers and educators, and, you know, people who were going through training at that time, to then think carefully about the work that they were doing. Whereas I think Whangarei had not had that happening so clearly, particularly for infants and toddlers, which was sad to hear. So I think that there was some really exciting changes. I do feel that there was a major step taken back in 2009. So I did want to sort of preface by saying that, because people lost a lot of funding and they didn't know actually how to access things. So that then sort of we had a sense of, you know, that individuals had to focus on that rather than centres. I think that in Australia, I only really started to, you know, work. I did do some observation in 2009 when I visited once, but I think that practice is much further behind here than it is in New Zealand. And I think the professionalisation of the workforce, to have qualified, you know, bachelor qualified teachers being the benchmark in New Zealand has been a very influential to how practice has been. So I think that's been really key in order to really make some considerable shifts. But that, I think that burgeoning interest in the Pickler House has continued on, you know, with that first Pickler course. And I think that we, you know, for myself, Penny and Maureen, Nicole and Tash and I, we really came back to Aotearoa really willing and ready to support change. And so I think that there was some big changes that started to happen. But then, yeah, I'm not entirely sure what happened after a period of time other than the, you know, the political shifts, etc.
Where do you think that infant and toddler teachers could be developing now?
I think that it's really important to keep on bringing it back to the relationship. So to really keep on thinking about how can I, you know, how can I keep on developing? I think that often people espouse quite a bit of theory. Sometimes teachers think that they know about care. Oh, yeah, I've heard about that you involve the child. But then they actually don't enact that. I think it's really important to, you know, think about that relationships and care is not something that ends. And I feel like sometimes people aren't so interested in talking about it. But for me, I could talk about this until the cows come home. I'm so interested in understanding, you know, toilet learning. And I'm still, you know, thinking about this. You know, I found a new book this week that I'm thinking, well, I want to see if I can get a copy of that. You know, really thinking about how to keep on, you know, shifting that. So I think it's always crucial to put the child's experience at the forefront of our mind and not just to think, to follow a pattern of what you think it should look like. So for teams to actually really engage in very active pedagogical discussions so that they can really think and break down and really understand what will this look like at our centre. You know, often I'd worked with centres that would say, can you tell us what to say? And I'd say no, because if I tell you, you're still not going to do it. And it's really important for you to make a decision about what is the best way in which we can, you know, support this child through the nappy change process or support the child to go to the toilet? You know, what are the ways in which we can do this? And really actually then you can come out, oh, well, we could say this. And then someone else says, yeah, but if we say this, then it could be interpreted as this. You know, so they're actually engaging, and I love to engage in those types of conversations, and that was very clearly modelled to me you know, in Hungary in 2004, that is the way that you engage as a professional. It's not about criticizing people. It's not about, you know, questioning without, with this, I don't like that. You have to have, engage in dialogue and to really think deeply, but not just with your head, but also with your heart. And so I think that's my constant problem in my work that I want to keep on having is how can I help educators to think and teachers to think with their head and their heart? Because it's the two together that need to consistently work on that, you know, and they work with young children.
Yeah, great, for sure. So anything interesting happening in 2021 that you'd like to share with us, Catherine?
I think, well, it's really hard to know at the moment what will be happening in terms of, you know, whether people will be able to travel, etc. As I mentioned, I am the chairperson for ITANA, which is the Infant and Toddler Advocacy Network Australia, and so I can share the link with you. It's just www.itana.org.au. We had intended this year, and of course everything had to be put on hold, to bring out three of our colleagues from the Pickler House. So that was Jutka Hafner, so she's a Pickler caregiver, and Sylvie Papp, who's a pedagogue, so she works supporting one of the daycare groups there, so they refer to it as the Birchdare, the daycare, at the Pickler House. So she works very closely with one of the groups there. And then also the translator, Alex. And so we were planning to bring them out to both Auckland and also Sydney. Of course, that had to be postponed. So here's hoping that they will be able to come out next year in July, around the same time, to be able to offer that course in Auckland and Sydney. If not, it's really hard to know what's going on.
Yeah.
I will be working on a book project. So, you know, that's something that's exciting that, you know, will be happening, but it probably won't be released at least until the end of next year. So that's something I'm trying to sort of work on after this. I enjoyed this, you know, the book project that I had. But it'll be a longer one for sure and a different topic. But yeah, I think that to engage, if you know, if we aren't allowed to travel much, if we aren't allowed to engage much, then actually engage in reading and watching videos. And I mean, watching the entire video. I'm working with students at the moment who watch the first 15 seconds and then drop out from that. But to, you know, really read, there's lots of amazing books around attachment that you can read. You know, I've got a whole pile next to me. You know, a fantastic one if you're thinking, oh, I hadn't thought about working with, you know, primary caregiving or key educator, key teacher relationships, whatever you'd like to call them, or even just broadly attachment relationships in early childhood with older children, then this book is fantastic. Key Persons in the Early Years by Peter Alpha. So he's a colleague of mine from the UK. Peter Alpha and Eleanor Goldschmidt and Dorothy Selleck from the UK, and they've got a fantastic chapter in there that talks about the 3 to 5 age group and how to support them with that. There's also, you know, some other fantastic ones that talk about the key person approach. So that book was talks about, you know, key persons in the early years. And again, bringing it back to politics, I think it's really important to keep in mind that in the UK, within their early years regulations, you actually legally have to have a key person for each child. So that's a primary caregiver for each child. So I think that's really important to think about, that actually, you know, there are some countries in the world that are actually seeing in terms of understanding research, and they're actually really putting that into policy. And so I always, you know, try and think about how, and I always appreciated how politically active early childhood people were in New Zealand, to actually really say, hey, we need to have this into policy and this is really important. I think it is important to keep in mind, though, that we don't want to get into the situation that sometimes people do, which is, I'm just grouping children based on, oh, yeah, I get on with them quite well, or I'm grouping them based on, I'm doing all of their observations and assessments. So that's not what it's about. It's about the relationship, and it's about, you know, that I change their nappy, I support them to go to the bathroom, I feed them as much as possible. you know, all of those sorts of things. Of course, I support them to build a bridge to other relationships, and I think that's really an important thing to think about. So I want them to flourish and to thrive when I'm not there. And with older children, the relationship does look different, but it's about, I've got a real advocate for me at the centre. They know me and they know my family really well. They really want me to be here. They pay attention to my interests. We connect at different times in the day. You support me to flourish, and that's wonderful. And I think earlier on, before we were recording, we were talking about that idea of continuity of care. And that's a fantastic idea as well, that we did start to implement at my old, the centre that I used to work at. So, but that took 4 years of debating for us to work out how that would work, because, in New Zealand, which is quite different to Australia, you have children going off to school at five. And so you have children moving and shifting throughout the centre throughout the year, whereas typically in Australia it's just once a year. So that's a big difference and quite a complication to have. So we had to think about that carefully. But I loved it as well, because then you'd have a cohort of children not just having a strong relationship with the teacher, but actually having a fantastic relationship together. And I think that's the most powerful thing as well, because then actually, no matter what happens, they actually are a community within themselves, and they actually support each other, and then hopefully can even advocate to go on to school together as well. Now I'm thinking even about continuity of care and that project that was at Aonga Whaa Samoa, they did with the TLRI project, where they looked at, oh no, maybe it was the Centre of Excellence, I think it was actually, sorry, not TLRI, where they looked at actually continuity of care and starting from the age of one, and actually then their teacher then went through to school with them, which was wonderful. So, really different situation there, and fantastic. You can see that these types of relationships connect in well across many different cultures. But I think that to understand them more and to read widely about it, that's something that I'd really suggest, is to, while we're maybe a bit more restricted in terms of where we can go in the world, I know I was very sad to not be able to go to Hungary this year, and the course that I was planning to do there next year is now going to be online. So, I've been collecting lots of books so I can prepare myself. So hopefully.
Yeah, I think that post-COVID, there's a lot of changes to the way that we're all going to be travelling and the way that we're going to be engaging in professional learning. But
yeah,
it would be wonderful if we could perhaps ask for your recommended reading list, Catherine, for everybody. Yeah. We could share that. And
yeah, absolutely.
So I agree with you, people need to be looking, early childhood teachers can be looking at what are the learning opportunities there are for them online.
For sure,
as well, and there are plenty of those around too. So,
yeah, I think there's also, I have to think about what it is called right now, but there's a new, pretty helpful new education website that's really bridging. I don't think what it was called. I'll have to look up the link and send it through. But they've had some really nice infographics and all sorts of different things to better then help teachers and new graduates and pre-service teachers to really bridge the gap to actually really connecting and understanding, what does it mean to connect theory and practice. So that's something I've really appreciated a lot, is that advocacy work that's been going on as well. So there are some fantastic new resources that I'm really appreciating. I'll see if I can quickly find it on my page. I think it's called the Education Hub.
That's a New Zealand research-based.
Yeah, so that's a really fantastic new website, and I think Vicky's been posting all sorts of different things on the Education Hub's page about infant and toddler pedagogy. So there's some really nice infographics if you're a visual learner. There can be some really good things there. Also, PICLA USA have got their conference that's available online, so I spoke for that. I recorded a section for that. So they've got a range of people from all around the world talking about, the influence of PICLA and how we can think about play and care and all of these other things. So that's a fantastic resource as well. So,
there's plenty.
There's so much out there. So yeah, I think, but yeah, reading, there's heaps of fantastic books. So I can definitely share some of my recommended reading list for sure.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Catherine. That's
no problem.
Really, really interesting and valuable for early childhood teachers. And we look forward to catching up with you sometime again soon. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Angela. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.